Hello, everybody, and welcome back to The Gods Will Not Save You, The Wire Revisited. I'm Willie.
Hi, this is Jakob, and this is a podcast where the co-hosts do a deep read into each episode of The Wire.
Yep, that sounds like you did a great thing there, Jakob. And I know we're kind of circling the drain here, or like we're coming to an end at this, at this little venture. But just in case you're coming in late or you decide to have a heart at the last minute, anchor.fm/thegodswillnotsaveyou/support. We're still donating all the money to the Michael K. Williams nonprofit foundation, We Build the Block. With all that out of the way, let's get into season 5, episode 5, React Quotes. Joe will be missed.
Joe will, and they're meeting up at Patterson Park. I'm pretty sure Marlo and, wait, it's Spiros, right? I don't know why on my way here I was changing it. No, that's not, that. It's Bondus, right?
I think.
It's both, right?
Yeah, he's been called two different, because his name is not his name, right?
No, yeah, it's, who knows what it is. But, he's putting Marlo on to texting. What is this? What is Marlo? I mean, is he playing like dumb, or I mean, is he really?
Oh, I thought he was showing him a dick pic. Oh. No, I don't.
Oh, you're in the HBO universe. No,
I don't think that, but I can't remember like what it was specifically that he showed him, or like if we're not supposed to know, or if it gets like revealed later. But
okay. Yeah. But their, you know, new relationship, which we all saw coming, is now solidified.
Yeah. At the expense of good guy Joe's life, which is really unfortunate.
Savage, man. Yeah. The Greeks never cared, you know.
They never cared, and apparently Levy doesn't either. Like, yeah. He just has, like, open knowledge of, I mean, of course he knows, like, everything that's going on in the organization, so... He's not fearful at all of Marlo's wrath or like his double crossing. He feels like he's immune from all of that.
Wild, man. Well, yeah. Marlo wants to go celebrate down in Atlantic City.
Yeah.
Oh, man. We were this close. We were just one Chris comment away from Marlo's boardwalk empire.
I know, right? Yeah.
Was he being serious about that? Like,
I know. It's like a rare moment of levity for Marlo where he's like, yeah, man, let's celebrate the fruits of our labor. Like, it's that like deadpan, but it's the most exuberant I think we've seen him in his whole run.
Yeah, he just like pull up in Atlantic City and just like walk through like an abandoned casino.
Yeah.
And then just look at the beach. Yeah. Like a gray, dreary day. It's like, this was fun.
I bet you he would like end up like getting a pit boss murdered because he like walked through like some of those gambling tables that he wasn't supposed to.
Yeah. He'd knows, man? Yeah. We got to make some sort of alternate, like, you know, fan fiction. Marla goes to AC.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
No. Is fan fiction even a thing anymore?
Oh, well,
that's like writing, right?
Yeah. But I mean, it for sure still is a thing, but...
Look
at The Wire Part 2 by Norris Davis.
Oh, yeah. But we're going to talk about the real Norris, not fake Trout Norris.
Yeah.
A.K.A., you know,
Ed. But Chris, he's like, this is our little sitcom moment where we watch a cold-blooded killer, like, be nice to his family. Have we...
Yeah.
Has there been like any clues along the way that he just calls them his people. So
yeah. What does that, I mean, yeah, his kid's kind of like a little like nerdy looking like Urkel or something. He's like, hi.
Yeah.
Waving like bye. It's really sad. And his whoever, you know, like his girlfriend, wife, baby mama looking all like dead eyed, just like, Jesus Christ. Like,
I know, right?
It's depressing.
Yeah, but is Chris still like a better father than McNulty, you think?
Yeah. we might like...
I mean, he's got the scars to atone for, like, or, you know.
Yeah, like he wanted to prove that, you know, break the cycle of abuse and
the ancestral trauma or whatever, or hereditary
ancestral,
or just like, you know, his dad. Well, I guess
someone like abused him.
Was there? Yeah, there's like a perhaps like a history of sexual abuse in the family line. I don't know. We'll never know.
Yeah, probably. I mean, yeah, he might be. I mean, you know, I don't know. Can you, at, like, once you surpass a certain threshold as a human, can you, like, reintegrate into other, like, aspects of, you know, like being a family person? I don't know.
Yeah, it's definitely crazy. A fine line to walk for sure. That, yeah.
Yeah.
I've never want to encounter.
Yeah, I'm not really too familiar with that. yeah, man. So, got a lot of going on with the crew, you know, Marlo and his people also, making the rounds, man.
Yeah.
They're hitting up, was it Rim Sport? Something sports? Norris's spa. Woo! Where he knows how to party like a rock star.
I know. I can't believe that song is in this show. I remember that video with frightening clarity.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Do tell.
No, I don't want to get into it. It was very annoying. Was that like rap rock?
Nah, man, don't do the, like, that's like, when I think of rap rock, I think of like that, like Limp Bizkit, you know.
That's new metal? Oh, okay.
Limp Bizkit?
Yeah.
Well, that's like rack, right? Like, I was into that, like, Cypress Hill did some of that stuff.
Okay.
But I don't think like party like a rock. I mean, I guess there was from like, but I think they're, it's coming from the whole, it's like a different angle, you know. They are coming from the point where Limp Bizkit wishes they could start, you know, so I don't think it's fair to be like, you know, they came from like hip hop and rap, but you know, they kind of tried to integrate the whole rock stuff and like rock star mentality into, you know, the rap.
Yeah.
Whereas Limp Bizkit's like a wannabe rapper who's like doesn't even know what the hell.
I see.
I don't know, man.
That's good. Check out Woodstock 99 documentary, everybody. But so Monk is showing up at the rim shop with a bulletproof vest on, knowing that he's being watched by Omar and Donnie.
And, yeah.
you know, Norris could help out with him here by just enrolling him in a for-profit college, maybe.
Oh, so. That's what, I was like reading this note, like, wait, what? Oh, yeah, this is like callback. This is brilliant stuff, man.
You know, give him a place to hide out in during the day.
Young man, take off that bulletproof vest and, you know, I'll show you the way. You know, just, it's like Everest of Baltimore. Brought to you by Norris Davis.
Yeah.
Oh man, what a guy. I miss this guy. And I really thought like that would be our, like, I mean, you know, you always post some great stuff and I'm late with it, but I think there was some like some question into the backstory of character, and then I tried it, man. I tried to bait old AO Despair into responding, getting into some Norris content. Never worked.
Yeah.
I was like, why Elijah Davis then? Oh, yeah, it was like the Deuce and, you know, is this like mirroring, you know, was it Leon or the...
Oh, Slim, Amon Glover's
Yeah, character, his character is like, you know, calling after he shoots a man. Oh, this is Cuddy, man.
Yeah.
This is, and it's like, everyone knows this is what happened in Baltimore, blah, blah. Why Elijah Davis? And why did Cuddy shoot Elijah Davis? Blah, blah. And why? Like, that's Norris's cousin, apparently.
Wow.
Crazy stuff.
Yeah.
But, man, we got to do more deep reads into Norris.
Yeah.
All time great.
From the looks of, like, you know, I guess we could give like a little like rundown of it. Like Norris at one point was writing a play that was supposed to be the sequel to The Wire, and David Simon basically like sent him a cease and desist, or like he was trying to like convince him to stop doing it because, you know, it's his IP or whatever.
Norris doesn't scare, man.
Right, and he got into this whole thing, like, The Wire is based on real people. It's from my life. I know it. And he just had some, the actor had some kind of crazy adventures of like, you know, trying to get people enrolled in ITT Tech.
Yeah, you don't need welfare. Just come to my for-profit.
Yeah.
I mean, this is, and it's ironic too, because so much of this content's like nonprofit driven. So
yeah,
to have him, it's just like, wow, so many layers. Bravo, bravo.
Nice. It's crazy.
But yeah. I'll be honest, I'm late to the party. I mean, that's also, you know, Norris Day was famous for throwing parties for like, you know, certain street figures on their, maybe on their way to the pen and whatnot.
Yeah.
But, you know, the whole like, oh, we're setting Omar up. Like, this is a, like they are outpatient. Their patience is even greater than Omar in some regards, or.
I suppose so. Yes.
I never really. Oh, do you?
Yeah. Resume. Okay.
All right. Willie's logged back on. Yeah. So I suppose so. Yes. Yeah. I've, you know, I'm a fake trout viewer at times. So
no, I
didn't really notice like, oh, wow, you get like they've all been planning this all along, just baiting them into and like doing the home invasion.
I mean, I think a lot of it is probably left unsaid between the episodes where we're just meant to kind of fill in the missing pieces or that the narrative doesn't explicitly provide. But yeah, I mean, I think they must know he's back by now because he already assaulted Slim Charles.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
But they're just, yeah, they're like hunting the hunter almost.
Yeah.
By luring him into their trap.
Yeah.
I suppose so. What else, man? I mean, that goes like...
I mean, do you want to just move on to Omar?
Yeah.
Because Omar. It's kind of connected a little bit.
So, yeah, Omar and Donnie are like doing some classic surveillance. Yeah. I mean, when they... I'm sorry. I know I do this all the time, but it's like when they zoom out of these like brilliant car shots where they're listening to old school like jams and whatnot and oldies, it's just like... seems like an empty lot they're in, or it's just like one car.
Yeah,
like they could, I mean, couldn't they have like shown up in two cars or had another associate just like, oh, we're just gonna park a few like cars on this strip of pavement just to make it seem like there's other people around, because it's just like them in the open. But you know, it's great, you know, it's great stuff while it lasted, I guess.
I mean, the thing about art, like,
don't tell me, but
is that you know, it's really great a lot of the time, but upon like repeat viewings over like years and years of time, you start to notice little flaws in the painting.
No, I mean, it's not a flaw really. I'm just like, yeah, what do I know?
Sorry to sidetrack real quick, but I just thought of this. Do you think Marlo playing DJ at the rim shop and putting on Party Like a Rock Star is for him to substitute the thrill he would get from going to Atlantic City, so he has to compensate somehow?
Man, that's a great point. Yeah. It's like, we'll just like, yeah, this is okay. Chris approves a party at like Rim Sport or whatever with Norris. And yeah, like we said, yeah, no one throws a party like old Norris.
Right.
Davis.
But yeah. So Omar and Donnie, rest in peace to both Michael K. Williams and Donnie Andrews.
Yeah.
But they finally work up the like courage and like they think they have the go ahead to go into the apartment, guns blazing, to try and wreak vengeance on anybody who stands in their path. And Donnie catches one in the head. Omar seems like he's about to die from you know, just a hail of gunfire before he runs and jumps out a window, which was supposedly based on something Donnie Andrews had done.
Yeah. past. Yeah. But before that, he shoots O-Dog in the leg like he did like the Hopper in the first scene, right?
Yeah.
That's crazy. I never noticed that really either. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. O-Dog's not, you know, it's like probably at the time you're all, yeah, that's what you get. Like, kill Bodhi. But then now we know more about, or I've learned a lot more about the actor and stuff. I'm like, oh, man.
Yeah, he's a great guy. He gives a great comedic performance in the Fear Street movies, Daryl yeah. Britt Gibson.
I got to watch those.
Yeah, and he's in We Own the City. He's going to be in We Own the City.
Right? Yeah, he's going to be a great guy in that show. No. Slumlord! Yeah, but apparently Donnie was renowned, right, for his, like, ninja-like abilities. Like, he leapt off of, a bridge one time onto some railroad tracks or something I read Simon say, like, on Poplar Grove, or I don't know. Weird, crazy stuff. But he also, like, leapt out of an even higher, like, building and the Murphy Homes or something, like George Street, I read once. Or maybe I got to go back and look. It's in the map. But, yeah, how the, like, Donnie, he's a big guy. He's, like, 6'1", 6'2". Like,
yeah, I mean, like, hulking.
Yeah, so is it one of those things where, your bone density actually helps, is like, instead of being a detriment, like, it just, you just kind of like bounce off the ground or something. But yeah, that's crazy stuff, man. Yeah. I don't know, what do you think about this whole Omar thing, like, now that we know it's probably grounded in, like, actual events, but at the time I'm like, wait, no
yeah,
way.
I like what you said, that, like, oh yeah, Donnie, like, even did even crazier stuff and this was based on, because, like, like, I'm aware of, like, the the fan backlash to the scene, like, this is where the show jumped the shark, fuck season five. But it's like, oh, I mean, not only was this based on something real that happened, but there is even something even more outlandish. God, that's some Spider-Man shit, as Marlo says.
Right? And that's some, like, David Simon doing his Spider-Man stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Spider-Man shit. Just Ed Burns doing it remotely from Namibia.
Yeah, that's just David Simon spinning his web that makes up the intersection between fiction and reality, his simulation web of content.
Simulation web of
Anyway, so yeah, we talked about that. I guess we could get into the police stuff now, right?
Yeah, I mean, they've got this homeless killer case, but I mean, right, like, before that, I guess, you know, Marlo's visited his lawyer, his new lawyer Levy, and, you know, he's brushing up against the police, the shady lawyers. So I guess he has no choice, given his people are getting, like, gun cases, and but there's a Herc lurking around.
Yeah. Can't that be considered one of the things that's, like, ripe for criticism of this season? Like, don't you think Marlo, when he saw that Herc was, like, working in Levy's office, would be, like, a little more shy about, like, possibly agreeing to this arrangement?
Yeah, like, I mean, yeah, that's definitely, like, in bounds.
The king of no loose ends, pretty much. Like,
talk to your local cinema operator, but, you know, never talk business. But also get a lawyer who has an, like, city cop, like, on like, on their payroll.
You know, was chasing you at one point.
And but I guess he doesn't know how greasy Levy is, that he's basically, like, seemingly hired Herc to leak this type of information in, like, a roundabout way to the cops. Like, oh, my hands are clean. Well, he stole the number. I mean, I need him to catch a wiretap case, though. I didn't realize that either, to be honest, like, how blatant Levy was, like, just inviting Herc to take the number to the cops, because it just means more money for them.
Yeah.
Damn, dude. I'm such an average viewer.
No, that's fine. But do you think Herc probably also knows that Proposition Joe is dead, even though, like, it barely got any mention in the newspaper. But
yeah,
maybe he feels resentful towards Marlo that, like, he took his new friend away. They were both commiserating over Irvin Burrell's mental shortcomings not too long ago.
Yeah, he's like, that guy was, man, you know, maybe I would, like, instead of going through Levy's Rolodexes, I'll just want to go through his, like, Rolodex of clock orders to fill. Like he could have been like the missing link. Like he could have really bridged the gap in like white East Baltimore hearth. You know, like he could be that character he was as an undercover cop, but for real, like helping Joe branch out more to like Dundalk and stuff.
Fan fiction.
Yeah.
But, you know, he had to die. But yeah, so what else we got? We got the stuff going on with Bunk is getting pissed off that Jimmy's case is like actually getting traction now. And they're pulling Kima away from her legitimate murder investigation, which is ridiculous because if Kima like was able to like pursue that home invasion as diligently as she wanted to, it would actually bring them closer to the Stanfield organization.
Yeah, that's a great point. Jimmy's selfish. I mean, he's got to like do it his way, and like things can't just work out while like taking a more, I guess, linear path. You know, it has to.
He's got to play his mind game.
Yeah,
and
can't be that simple, or like people can't just do what they got to do. It's like he's on his crusade. Sorry, it's just this terrible analysis.
No, it's good.
Bunk mad. Yeah, I mean, I was looking up. This is why, like, this is such a, like, awful, shaky, offering of mine. I was feverishly trying to look up, that place, the Hi-Hat, where Lester's, like,
trying to get pepper steak from.
Yeah, he's the king of the crank calls.
Yeah.
And phone stuff.
Yeah.
So anyways, that's why I was like distracted, but I can't even find it. I swear I found it was like this. There actually was a place on North Wolf in East Baltimore. So, but okay. One day we'll figure out if they got pepper steak.
I mean, one thing that Carver did find out though, is that Herc maybe has like a sliver of a conscience because he's trying to make up for that whole Randy debacle by giving Herc the phone number. So
yeah,
that's a good thing he did there, even though it doesn't end up really doing anything as I remember, or I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, it did if it doesn't help necessarily in the investigation, it led to the world being treated to that Marlowe call line, right?
At some point, yeah, I try, like, for those out there who aren't familiar, I believe that this was the phone number, 410-915-0909, that used to be able to call, and it would just send you to a message, and that message was the Marlowe's infamous speech about his name being his name.
Yeah, I think this proves, like, how far we've come on this project, like, because that literally doesn't, like, when we started this, you're like, call this number, and I'm like, a Baltimore number? I'm like, all suspicious, like, what are you talking? You're like, trust me, just call it, man, because we're like bouncing things off of each other, like, oh, do you know this, like, we're about to do this project, like, oh, read this, look at this. Mostly me probably just trying to like prove how much, like, oh man, I'm so into this, man, like, look. And then you're like, dial it. So I did, and now almost 2 years later, shit doesn't exist. We're like ancient, man.
Yeah. But let's see. What else do we got going on here? Jimmy is really falling apart in his personal life and not, paying any attention to his kids, missing their plays and whatnot. And Elena is, reading him the riot act about potentially getting back with Beatty, because everything is cyclical at this universe, even McNulty's philandering and rampant alcoholism.
So when he's ignoring Elena's calls, like, what the hell does she want? Has he totally forgotten that Sean had a play, or was it Mike? Like, he's just like, I don't have time for, like, by saying that he doesn't have time for her shit, is he just like saying, you know, like, F you to his kid? Or is he really that, like, he's so far gone, he totally even forgot? Like,
I think part of him is that he's fronting to Lester.
Oh, yeah.
About like, oh, just my bitch of an ex, or, you know,
yeah,
that's
yeah,
probably his, it's all vocabulary.
Good. I mean, we listen to Young Dolph, RIP.
Yeah. He's probably just fronting to Lester that she's being, she's nagging him or whatever. But I think deep down, like, part of him still feels a little guilty, and he knows that he's missing the play.
Yeah.
But he's just trying to put on a face for Lester.
Well, that's
just my guess. I don't know.
Like, nowhere will you get this level of analysis into Jimmy's, like, conscience and his kids' play.
You're right there, man. You need a moment to readjust your TV.
No, I like this. Like, it kind of provides, like, urgency. Come on, I can't hold it much longer. Okay, next topic. No,
I mean, I think.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, we're getting.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, they're gonna do all this elaborate or not, like, wiring with the
right.
You know, the call, because we're going to talk about the newsroom. Scott Templeton's out doing his little fake trout prank calls to himself. So at least Lester's, like, doing them to a like, known mass murderer.
Yeah, Lester makes something funny out of it, where Templeton is just like, I want a Pulitzer.
Yeah. So McNulty's, like, creepily, like, he's flirting, like, he's always weird with Alma, and now he's, like, talking about sexual compulsions.
Yeah, I think he's, like, part of that is, like, his overall strategy is that he thinks if he could just, like, woo Alma, like, it'll help his case for the story getting blown up more. And he's, I feel like he's already kind of messed things up, because you know, maybe Alma wants to bring another person along there to kind of put a stop to all of Jimmy's advances. And it's bad. It's just unfortunate that it has to be the fakest of all trouts, Scott Templeton.
I like that. That's a very creative introduction. So he's getting into the, what exactly is going on, you know, that... Like, there's no rape, but it's just, like, bite marks.
Bite marks on the butt. Or is it on the butt, or?
Bite marks on the butt. All this, like, weird, just nasty stuff. And, you know, while this is going on, gaining traction, there are stories, that aren't.
Right.
Which is kind of the undercurrent of the season, right?
Right. Prop Joe and Hungry Man's murder are getting pretty, what's the word for it? Shat upon?
is that so?
In the latest edition of the Baltimore Sun, because they're getting, flung so far back, they're not the, Proposition Joe and Hungry Man's murders aren't front page material, even though... Again, like, getting to the root of those murders would actually aid Jimmy and Lester for, convicting Marlo or, putting cracks in his organization by implicating, Chris and Snoop and Cheese and all of them. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Plenty of mistakes to be had by people all around. And as you said, are you...
I was like, I mean, very compelling stuff, but I asked in our little note, keep us on track here at the Gods Will Not Save You, very thoroughly researched and outlined every episode. In the newsroom, they're talking about John Waters movies, and I'm like, ever seen one? I asked, what are they like? You want to tell us a little bit about that? Because it's also very, rather detailed.
I mean, anybody who has seen, like, a lot of John Waters movies knows he's pretty, like, he likes gross and disgusting. Like, he likes getting into, like, icky stuff.
Okay, I'm reading this like, wait, what?
Which is why that's, like, the joke, like, he took photographs with children. Is that even allowed? But, like...
Yeah,
it's all in good fun. John Waters has talked a lot about how he's a huge fan of The Wire, and David Simon has reached out to him too and said, like, oh, I love your work. I love the movie Pink Flamingo, Pink Flamingos, where a drag queen eats poodle doo-doo off the floor. I mean, but Hairspray is like a, they made like a Broadway musical out of it, so it's pretty wholesome. So
yeah, I gotta watch, I gotta see that, man.
I don't know if it's your,
No, I gotta, like, there's some geo in it, right?
I mean, Baltimore? Yeah, I guess so.
What is it, just like a, kind of like, 60s type? Like,
Hairspray?
Yeah, I mean, it's a classic thing. It's like a,
I can't remember.
Teenager thing?
Yeah, or? It's like about a TV station that holds a dance competition or something.
Oh, that's, yeah, that, I want to see that.
Ricky Lake is in it.
Yeah, I've heard about that.
Okay, yeah. But they made like a remake with, that's based on the Broadway musical. I don't know, but anyway. Also, I just want to point out also that the whole thing about the serial killer is detracting from coverage of Clay Davis.
Yeah.
Which is also like...
It's in my notes.
Disadvantageous to Lester. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And Jimmy, so...
More big stories that aren't being reported.
Right. Sorry, I didn't mean to get off track there.
No. I'm happy I learned about like Pink Flamingos, doo-doo, drag queens.
Yeah. He had a great guest appearance on The Simpsons in season 8. It's a really funny episode. Anybody watch it? It's great. But yeah, Templeton almost kind of, in McNulty's mind, serendipitously fakes that call, which allows McNulty to come into the newsroom and kind of throw his weight around and figure out that Templeton is like pretty full of shit and that he can like manipulate him to his bidding and hopefully get this story more publicized.
Right. Like it's like, no, McNulty will like raise the stakes.
Oh yeah, for sure. And he can barely like hold back his shit-eating grin in the conference room.
It's like, come on, Templeton, like, what are you like, come on, you just so soft. And meanwhile, Gus knows everything that's happening.
Yeah. I mean, he thought the story was bullshit up until 10 minutes ago, but
yeah. I mean, where are we at now? I mean, damn, dude, we're crushing it right now. But yeah, I mean, Scott's like, he's just worse. Like, he's the worst. He just, they're like, go talk to homeless people. It's like, where am I going to find them? Imagine a world like that, Willie. Gosh, where like, you're wondering where, I mean,
that's a
we're all
question
in your very safe, you know, neighborhood.
Yeah, they're but, still homeless. I mean, I still see homeless people.
All right. Yeah. Where though? Where can I find them? A payphone on South Hanover and West.
Which is where he committed his prank call from.
Yeah, that's some good geo there.
Nice.
I mean, I'm assuming, like, you know, the show's very accurate. I know that I'm always ragging on them.
And also, like, McNulty is making overtime at the... Or, well, I guess it's not until the article is printed that he starts making unlimited overtime.
Yeah.
So I'm like, what? Can he afford to buy a newspaper instead of always stealing it? Like, he's not going to show like any solidarity with the people who are doing him solids.
Exactly. I mean, come
solidarity
on.
Solidarity with the solids.
These cops complaining. That's why I don't feel sorry when he's in his like shitty car and like his sob stories, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, the cops, no money. And then they just steal newspapers.
Yeah, that's, yeah, man, that's inappropriate.
Come on.
The
newspaper journalism's dying, man. But yeah, you know, like I find it great that Viva House, they're like anti-war, anti-poverty, anti-this, and then anti-fake news as well, right? Because yeah, they're like trolling old fake Scott.
Yeah. They say not exactly Bob Woodward, which sent me like into a little bit of a rabbit hole because I'm like...
You're classic.
But no, because like David Simon, I'm like, I know he has like a, he has a relationship with one of the Watergate reporters, and it turned out to be Carl Bernstein, who is the other guy who broke the Watergate thing, and they supposedly at one point were supposed to make a TV show about Capitol Hill, and that got greenlit the same time as The Deuce, but it never, I mean, it's still in development hell, I guess. But yeah, that's, I like that Brendan Walsh kind of shit all over Scott's.
Yeah, Brendan, there you go. I knew you'd come through with the facts. Like, it's not just V-Vals, it's a team. Brendan Walsh. Skills,
yeah.
that's pretty funny.
But yeah, he makes up some fake quotes from Nathan Levi Boston about being a family man and like having to protect his kids and all that, when he really was the one that was like talking about all the Satanism. But he is so bad at his job. He's like, the first name I get, I'm going to like,
yeah,
place it onto something else. Like, it's there's like, no like oversight of this guy just like running rampant with his incompetence. Like,
yeah. Nathan Levi Boston. I should have ran that name in our little search database. He's probably like NLB. That probably stands for something.
Well, the actor is Joe Hansard, who
okay.
appeared on Homicide: Life on the Street. It got me confused for a second there because I was like, oh shit, that's the guy from True Detective and Boardwalk Empire.
That's him, right?
No, it's not.
I was like,
I had to like double check.
I was waiting for him to go, my family's been here for a long time. Like, I'm like, this is literally that character. Like, even True Detective, they stole the Jameson, like, Jimmy on the Warpath thing. They got this guy.
They stole Clark Peters too, right?
Yeah. Nathan Levi Boston is basically in Carcosa now. Jesus. <Yeah. laughs> That's funny. We think alike about some.
I mean,
we think about some things like that.
We think alike because he looks alike.
Okay.
But so speaking of like newsroom reporting not being focused enough on Clay Davis, we got a total miscalculation by Bond and Perlman to reach out to the appropriate people in the press to publicize this whole thing, even though some might argue that this is kind of a vanity project for Rupert Bond. But yeah, Bill Zorzi really let Rhonda Perlman have it on those court steps about that perp walk that nobody was invited to except for Gail Gibson, who just... the call went straight to voicemail, and she's been on a freelance gig for the last few months. Sorry, I got run-on sentence.
You just one big dangerous run-on sentence tonight. Shouts out Corey Anderson. Don't jam me up like that again. Damn, he's giving it to her in all his Baltimore lore and glory.
Yeah.
What a...
good act. Like, yeah, surprisingly good actor. Yeah.
It's kind of like Simon's like more screen... worthy cousin.
Yeah, he definitely does a better job in the acting for sure.
Yeah, so like they're doing the whole wait, go off King. Okay, Clay, you were going off like Clay Davis, man. All you had to throw in was one shit.
But
I can't believe I did that.
No, it's
but
okay.
Yeah, short con, long con, did you?
Yeah.
You pretty much sum that all up, right?
Well, Carchetti, Carchetti and Norman are watching the speech and they remark how Clay must feel to be on the ass end of things, quote unquote, for once. And yeah, it's kind of, the way they talk about Bond, where he's like, oh, he's looking damn mayoral, like more so than Nerisse, which is like, on one hand, it's what Rupert Bond wants to get out of this whole thing, right? Like, this is kind of like a big publicity stunt for himself and his career when Lester was saying you should take it federal. And this just, like, goes to show you that, like, everybody is always constantly backstabbing each other because Tommy at one point did kind of have, like, an arrangement with Nerisse that, like, he would help groom her for the seat, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
but now their alliance is fracturing even more because Royce is out of the picture and he doesn't give a fuck.
What a boss, man. Royce is just like, I will like make sure you never get another greenback out of this city. And he's telling him to stand tall like Avon would tell like his nephew. Oh, shit.
That kind of toxic masculinity infects all walks of life, not just gangsters.
There you go. That's our thesis, or Willie's at least. Aside from alcohol is the root of all evils, toxic masculinity is behind all issues in The Wire. But Clay's having an ironic meeting with the radio talks show superstar Larry Young.
Yeah.
Wild stuff.
Because Larry Young was a corrupt state senator that had to go through all the... He got booted.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would just love to be a fly on the wall during the filming of this, because there's so much heated context around this. How do they get people with such opposing political views to agree to be on this show? And to an extent, they're poking fun at themselves, the whole thing with the governor.
Yeah. I have no clue. I mean, that's simpler times back then, or just, this is David Sime Spider-Man. David Samuel Leiterman.
Yeah. Because they're definitely not portraying Clay Davis or anything he does in a positive light. How did they get this guy who's basically the blueprint for him to be hey, come on the show?
I mean, maybe they just, at a certain point, they just laugh they can't take anything they did. I mean, even though it was serious, they're just so removed. And maybe that's what true reporting is, or quote unquote real police work. You build these rapport where you can step aside and look back on what you all were doing in your professional career and all that.
Yeah.
Because we have Larry Young, and then we even have the shout out, the name drop of cop that Simon always talked about, Warden, who is name dropped and made cameos. His name's brought up in this episode, and he was the one who apparently investigated this bizarre case from the book Homicide, where Larry Young claimed he got kidnapped when he really just got in a fight with his political aide because he was making advances on, or there was an involved fight over one of their fiancés. I think Larry Young was coming at him, too strong. So they got into it, and someone got hit with a 2x4 and then made up a story, and Warden investigated it. It's all Simu's spider-lation.
So there's even more weight to this bizarre.
He's he was cool with the whole this guy Clay is me basically, and he's shitty, but he says iconic lines. But
he's charismatic.
Yeah, and years later though, he's like, what, they dropped Warden's name in this episode? Oh hell, Simon, get on the phone. Yeah.
Man. Yeah,
that's fun. But yeah, I mean, I don't know, it's overkill with the whole civil rights ish kind of rally and rallying cry singing stuff for Clay,
Is this the stuff they talk about when they're criticizing liberals, they're using identity politics?
Yeah, probably.
Because they're trying to frame this as an issue that Clay Davis is being persecuted because he's black, but at the end of the day, he did get involved in rampant corruption, so
yeah, man.
I mean, it sells to the media that they're taking on this angle, right?
Wild, man.
Should we move on to talking about the boys of summer? What's left of them?
Yeah, it's just Mike and Dookie, pretty much. That's all we're treated to seeing.
So it's it's funny that Dookie and Naaman are the only two boys of summer. Or Kennard got beat up by two of the different boys of summer. He got beat up by Dookie, which is Jermaine Crawford, incredible actor, and
pretty big.
Yeah, nowadays, he's... Maybe he got shamed into body insecurity from being on this show, and
he's been training with Chad Coleman all this time.
Yeah, there you go. But it's just, again, it's ironic that Michael and Dookie both beat the shit out of Kennard at separate points, and Kennard is still the one that ends up killing Omar.
I mean, okay. I know you kind of go on these, you just are this is that theory, and they beat the shit. Did Dookie beat the shit? Come on.
He punched him once.
He's 4'6", so, I guess it's relative. He got hit twice, and that, for him, is this kid's got it. CTE maybe led him to kill like Omar and like his her. I mean, obviously environmental stuff, but I mean, this guy's like, this kid rather has had now so much probably like brain trauma that's like, can't be healthy.
Yeah, it really isn't.
But he has really good aim with the bottle. Like, I bet you he'd kill it in that, oh, sorry, that's a bet. I bet you he'd do really well in that, like, bottle flip game kids love.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because he has great aim. I mean, he just, okay, he hits Dookie really, like, accurately, you know?
And I also think he'd probably be a pretty malicious shit talker to all of his opponents.
Oh, yeah. Imagine trying to beat him in bottle flip. Oh, God. Or, like, flip cup if you're, like, he ever, like, escaped and went to college, you know, just like. Gump, flip. But Spider beats up. Now Spider beats the shit like out of Dookie.
Yeah,
he gets it way worse than Kennard did.
You think so?
Hell yeah.
Oh, you're talking about like when Dookie beats up Kennard
in this scene.
Yeah. I thought you were talking about some reason when Michael gives Kennard a brain hemorrhage or whatever.
Well, relative, like again, his size, like. Okay, Dookie getting hit like 20 times is probably relative to Kennard getting hit twice. You know?
Right, yeah.
But they like jump him and stomp him out.
Yeah.
Which is kind of crazy because it's like they still work for Mike.
Yeah.
So you just beat up your boss's like best friend. Like at this point, still closest friend almost. Who he's like, this is how you shoot people.
Yeah.
And it's like, you take care of the person I love most, Bug.
Yeah.
It's like, why would you do that? But
the new school is even crazier than the old school, man. No sense of...
Mike's like old school in this setting.
Yeah. No loyalty or, you know...
Can't believe that shit. You lost cool points with me.
But yeah, Dookie asks Mike to take him to Cuddy to train him how to fight. Cuddy has a little, you know, interest.
Dennis?
Oh, yeah, Dennis. Dennis has a little introspective moment when Michael is outside of the boxing gym and they share, like, a little moment of eye contact knowing that, like, they'll probably never work with each other again or train with each other again because they both realize they're going down different paths. Pretty meaningful introspective moment there between those two incredible actors. But yeah, Dookie is really bad at boxing. There's no other way to say it.
Yeah. You know, he's trying, he just has horrible range, like control, distance control, like just no combo. I mean, the kid's going, they're like doing body shots, which is good, you know?
Yeah.
Still a little like the headgear. It's like, you know, a lot of trauma, but tough environment. I sound soft, you know, like soy boy.
Yeah.
Oh, hello, CT. Yeah, it's like, you know, it's Baltimore. Anyways.
But I like what you said here about like, damn, couldn't.
Yeah.
I mean, Dennis couldn't have.
Helped more. Like, it's like probably the, is this the apex as far as Dookie's like journey and trying to get out, you know?
Right.
I mean, this could have, I mean, Prez did what he can, but he's teaching now. It's like, but like, this is literally Dennis's, like, he does have, you know, goals beyond just teaching kids how to box. Like, it's, oh, you learn how to box and we can go maybe travel and, like, you can, like, see a different world, but I guess he's still so, like, you know, he's stuck, so it's hard for him to see past.
Yeah.
And he's trying his best, but, I mean, he has contacts, literally, like, the deacon knew everyone in the city government, pretty much, or, like, he knows someone who knows someone, so, you know, no phone call, like, hey, I have this kid, he's really smart, he just doesn't know what to do. I don't either.
Simon and company are really good at these types of situations where they make everybody somewhat complicit in others' misery.
Yeah.
So it's like, even though Dennis does do a good thing by offering him his two cents on like what life is really about, like in hopes that it'll give him like a reality check that like learning how to box isn't going to solve all his problems. Yeah, there definitely is some more stuff he could have done, especially like, if he has any idea of the home environment he's in right now.
Yeah.
Maybe he doesn't. Maybe he's fearful of getting
Mike.
Yeah.
Like, you know, these are, Mike is, does happen to be friends with the guy who literally like tried to, you know, blow your leg off or kill you or just send a message, which he could have easily, Monk could have easily killed Cuddy by like severing his femoral artery, but
right, yeah.
I don't know. Well, what do you think about Mike and Dookie like going to the park
quote unquote shooting range?
Like, you know, Leakin Park probably or something.
Yeah.
Who knows? But, you know, it's kind of like this. I don't know. It seems almost something like you'd see from an early 2000s movie trailer or something. Like, you got to have heart.
Dun, dun.
Yeah. Clear eyes. Full heart. Can't lose. Like, it's kind of like, it's kind of corny or.
Yeah. I mean, and it's also funny that Dennis and Mike both tell Dookie separately, like, oh, life isn't in like the movies. Like, yeah. Dennis says, like, if you just knock one bully out, like, it's not like they're all going to back off. And Michael's like, oh yeah, don't point your gun sideways like they do in the movies. But this like little speech he gives in between gunfire is like kind of like a weird hood motivational PSA or something.
Yeah, this is like
I mean, it's not motivate, it's pretty like depressing the way he's like kind of laying out what his trauma has led him to.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I can't judge too much. I mean, you know, well, what can I say? I didn't really watch that much TV growing up, so I can't make these like comparison and jokes, you know, and then I don't know what they're going through. I'm just fake trouting it. I'll just be a little fake trout swimming up down that stream, trying not to get burned by the shell casings.
I mean, maybe this is just them laying the groundwork for Mike coming into Omar's position, because Omar is like one of the few characters that is allowed to be like a little more theatrical in this stubbornly realistic show.
Yeah.
So maybe he's like, yeah.
And he's got great, like they're showing off Mike's aim. So like it all, you know.
All the pieces matter, man.
Yeah.
No.
So let's talk about, no, we already talked about Omar. Bubbles.
Yeah, let's close things out with Bubbles, who, you know, just day by day is getting a little bit better, man. He's in for the long fight, and he's got it, man. It's okay.
Yeah, he's scrubbing pots. Really, like, doing a great job. And what is it?
Brendan?
Brendan Walsh?
Yeah.
From Viva House is telling him you got to do more, but he knows, like, has he just gone to Bubs and said, hey, you know, if this is what you're worried about, I know someone who can help you, or he needs to like allow Bubbles to go through his own process as far as getting tested.
But yeah, like what, so what is Bubbles's concern there? Like, why does him getting asked to serve food prompt him to go get tested for HIV, even though he knows it's sexually transmitted? Like, why is that the thing that like prompts him to go to Waylon for help and give him that little wake up call?
I don't know. I mean, didn't he think like Waylon guitar guy,
right?
He says, like, no, it's not transmitted that way. Or is he like, he thinks, oh, it's just an excuse by Bubbles. You know, it's really, it has nothing to do with that. It's like the shame and,
right,
you know, it's just like, you know, am I answering it or not?
But it seems like his decision to go get tested at the clinic for HIV was kind of spurned on by Brendan asking him if he wanted to serve food. Is that right?
Yeah, well, I mean, does Bubbles really think that, like, he can transmit it that way through like touching people's food and
but
stuff?
I don't think so, right?
Because I mean, Waylon does describe, like, he explains it, like, no, you can't, like, it doesn't work that way, Bubs, you know.
Oh, okay. I mean, because I thought, like, but didn't Bubs say something like, oh, I know,
oh, he said, okay. It's not about that, man. It's about the, like, you know, being out there, like,
right,
feeling like maybe he's so guilt ridden that feeling some more like happiness, you know, is going to send him to a spiral, and he needs, like, he's in, you know, the stage of just, you know, self punishment, like, ah, just scrubbing pots in solitude, like,
yeah,
this is my meditation.
There you go. He's fighting his addiction,
yeah,
to both heroin and depression, or like self,
there you go,
deprecation.
Yeah, yeah. Hey,
okay.
Sometimes you got to scrub some pots, man. It's like,
yeah. Shame ain't worth as much as you think it is.
Is that right?
Says Waylon to Bubs after the HIV test comes back negative.
There you go. Guitar guy with the gems.
I mean, yeah.
I probably have like thought about that quote, like when I'm like four Sierra Nevadas in, like in my early 20s, like, no, man, it's okay. You know, like what you did at the bar last week, it ain't worth as much as you like think. Like,
yeah.
All right, next episode. What, I didn't even understand what just happened. Keep watching. One day we'll talk about it. Very lucid, like sober, like, you know?
Yeah.
Well, now we're here.
But it's nice that Bubs has a helping hand in the form of Fran Boyd, you know, doing the test for him. But I don't know, that's like kind of like beautifully symbolic, where like the real world casting does like take on like a whole new thing. I mean, Steve Earle, of course, had his own problems with drug addiction, so that has its own kind of, that has its own like special aura around it a little bit. But like Fran Boyd actively taking part in someone's recovery is a pretty beautiful like cap to her story of like pretty hard times. So
yeah, and I, you know, not to get into like identity stuff, like maybe Bond, like, you know, the Dems would, you know, with Clay, but you know, it's like Fran is, you know, she is like, like she's more the like real Bubbles, you know. She's from like she's on the corner in Baltimore, whereas not saying Waylon's not like, you know, and like Steve Earle's real life experience, you know, I don't know what his relationship really was from with Baltimore, but he's from like West Virginia, right? But like that's a, like the character he portrays is very accurate as well, because like there's a definite, you know, like pipeline from West Virginia to like the white areas of Baltimore. So, yeah, but that's a whole different thing. But yeah, I mean, and then it's like Fran and Donnie in the same episode
who ended up getting married. Yeah.
Yeah. So they ended up getting married later on, right?
I think
like
so.
20, like in the 2010s.
Yeah. Well, when did Donnie Andrews die?
That's the thing though. Like he died
not too long.
Not long after, yeah. Right? So at least they got there.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Always appreciated. We're nearing the end here, so it's getting a little sentimental. But yeah, it's been great. If you want to follow us on any social media, where The Gods Will Not Save You on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Yeah, and also if you don't really want to reach out that way, we're up on our Gmail, thegodswillnotsaveyou@gmail.com.
Great. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. Talk to you soon.